Hello, everybody. This is Amanda Ellowesh, your quicker waker upper, and you are tuning in to Inalienable Sovereignty Conversations for Elevation. And I am excited and honored to introduce Susan Schloss, who is doing beautiful work around money and inclusivity and accountability. And I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about herself. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Amanda. What a pleasure to have this conversation with you this morning. So I'm a certified money coach, and that is the doorway that I meet people to do some deep healing work. For those who have found that their trauma has manifested in challenging relationships with money. So we go into deep exploration of that history and how it has created these blocks that people may have around whether it's overspending, under-earning, anxiety, and help people uproot that and change their money patterns.
Beautiful. I cannot wait to dive in with you because I know that you, as I kind of alluded to, people that know those words, those keywords of inclusivity and accountability, I know what that means, but not necessarily everybody knows what that means. So maybe you could share a little bit about what that means and why it's so important to you to weave that into the conversation around money.
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, it's just become so important to me over the past few years, especially since the upheaval around justice that happened in 2020 with George Floyd's murder. And so
I'm still here for some reason. The power has gone out on my camera, so I'm going to disconnect it and use just my regular old one. So keep on.
sure. So it's really important to me to have inclusivity in my community and to include in the money conversation the understanding that people of different backgrounds and ethnicities have really different life experiences in our culture when it comes to money, have different opportunity, have different access. And so to have that understanding and hold the space for all of that trauma that happens on the cultural level, as well as any personal trauma that might happen at the family level for people, was really important. And as I think I heard you or saw you write recently, that the colonization is something that affects all of us. So we all have to decolonize ourselves to really be able to have an inclusive culture.
Yes, indeed. And that's a tricky thing to do, to decolonize ourselves when it's like, here we are inside of this colonized mind, a lot of conditions and programming through our education, a lot of religion and the way things are right now, and then it's reflected all around us. So I'm curious what you see is, how do we decolonize ourselves from the inside, from inside the system?
It takes a lot of work, in my experience. It takes a lot of focus and commitment, and we have to come back to it again and again, and based on a commitment to really being able to clear out whatever's in the way of being able to connect with each other as humans, being our main, our race, human race. And really being able to be together in the heart. So I read a beautiful statement recently that we're all one in truth, but not in reality. So holding that paradox, that spiritual paradox of the oneness at the same time, recognizing our differences and our different life experiences. For me, the decolonization process has been about doing a lot of reading. There's some great books, Menachem Bresma's work around the body and the whole somatic piece of it, mm-hmm. the white body, the black body, and doing the healing at the body level.
Yeah.
And the other one that was really powerful for me, Me and White Supremacy,
mm-hmm.
which really got to all of the different things we as white people need to know that we need to be aware of and change our patterns around mm-hmm. when it comes to seeing and relating to people of other ethnicities.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've done one-to-one coaching and I've done group coaching.
Beautiful.
I've been staying in the game mm-hmm. and it's humbling.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're a fairly woke human, being a human right now is a humbling experience. That's a good sign.
It is for sure to know that we don't know everything. Mm-hmm. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to, touch on some of the, practical things we can do. And one of the questions I usually start off with, but didn't because some of these other pieces popped up that feel really important that I wanted you to really have the opportunity to respond to. But what does inalienable sovereignty mean to you, and how does it play into your work?
I love this subject. And it was great to be contemplating it over the last couple of days. This inalienable sovereignty has sort of an uncompromising edge to it. And when I looked up the definition of sovereignty, it more had to do with countries divorcing themselves from leaders who, were tyrants or something. Oligarchy. And really, that sovereignty is about us coming away from the patriarchal culture, making the choices that are in alignment for us. And not just patriarchal culture, but any values that we're not in alignment with, to have that courage to be true to ourselves. And constantly be in that inquiry. And it takes deep inquiry to really understand, well, what's my truth here? And then to be that person in any situation takes a lot of courage. So whether we're with our family, with our friends, or different groups of friends, or different communities, to be able to be myself and show up as myself is another piece of the sovereignty for me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for me, that word came in a meditation, those two words, inalienable sovereignty. And for me, it's about, the word sovereign comes from nobility, being able to have so much say in how we do things, right? But the inalienable part is about what you were just saying, like really accessing more of ourselves. There's been so much, I think a lot of us, when we think about colonization, we think, a few generations back, like the British and, coming in and having control. But the whole colonization mind frame, the power over, like, I'm going to come in and conquer, and everybody must subjugate themselves, that goes back centuries and centuries. And so many systems that have been adopted over time, school systems, religious systems, government systems, it is insidious. And so I feel like there's a lot of ourselves, all of us, way, 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 way back, we all had some kind of indigenous ancestors who mm-hmm. were in sacred relationship with the earth and communities. There weren't so many titles or entitlements, but communities recognized the interrelatedness, and people didn't really have titles per se. It was just, oh, this person has this gift. This person's a healer. This person's a leader. This person's an amazing plant person. This person can hunt. And so we just helped each other out. You know, we just recognized we are interdependent on our fellow humans and everything around us. And that power over is like, nope, you know, your abilities come from this power. And so for me, the inalienable sovereignty is really reclaiming this more ancient way of awareness of the self, interconnectedness, taking accountability, and also shining our own brilliant light that a lot of it got and gets kind of deprogrammed from us, so that we can be fit into these boxes. And I know that money for sure, money for sure is one of those power over experiences. And I'd love to just kind of pass on to you a little bit, the mic to share a little bit about your experience with money, the traumas that people experience, and how you support them in liberating themselves from the traumas around not enough, not having enough, earning, those kinds of things. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. It was wonderful to hear from you about inalienable sovereignty. I wanted to hear that today, so that's awesome. So working with people with their money and the different issues that come up for people, we go into, I mentioned the history. You know, when you think back to all of your memories around money, and doing that deep dive is very cathartic. And patterns start to emerge. And you also see, what did you take in from your parents? And you might not. A lot of times people don't recognize their strengths. So I work with money archetypes. And the money archetype I see a lot is the money innocent. And that is the person that has a lot of anxiety when it comes to dealing with money. So as people are building, I work especially with women, I work with some men too, but my group program is women. As that confidence builds, there is an adulting that happens, and there's a reclaiming, and there's a sovereignty. There's a commitment to taking care of ourselves on the material level and coming out of denial about the things that are, you know, little kind of pieces of candy along the way that seem like they're going to fix our lives, compared with the bigger picture of wanting to save. I find a lot of people really haven't built a saving muscle. And sometimes when you talk about the trauma, one of my clients thought, why would I want to have that in my environment? Because her experience was so painful growing up. Her parents fought about money constantly. So money had that connotation, had that energy for her of not being something she wanted to have around. Like, how fast can I get rid of this? And that really shifted for her, and that really changed her marriage too, because her husband was a saver. And so, of course, they pushed up against each other's values, and now they're very much in alignment around it. And then people who have a spending habit, a lot of times these imprints are in our chemistry and our neurology, right? Spending causes a dopamine reaction for some people. And so when there's stress, that's one thing that can, you know, disconnect from that stress. Oh boy, let's go shopping. Whether or not people buy anything, even now with all the online shopping available, that can be an addiction. And that's another aspect of sovereignty, is pulling away from these things that take us out of ourselves. And it's a beautiful way, in my experience, to think about it, coming into my sovereignty, like, pulling all my energy in and not getting pulled out by technology, by pretty things, or the next thing that I want to have, and really coming in and feeling into, well, what's really going to feed me at the essence level here?
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel inspired to ask you to share, like maybe take us through a client avatar's journey with you, like how they come in, you know, what you kind of shared the money innocent archetype, what they're coming in with, what you do with them, and what they're experiencing on the other side.
Thinking of one client who came in, she's in her 60s. She hasn't saved anything. And this is not uncommon, actually. And she has a nice income from a job. She is a woman of color who grew up with comfort, financial comfort, you know, ease. But racism is a very powerful element. And she realized as she was doing her money biography that that's what really had the imprint in her generational trauma. Yeah. How much stress living in a culture of racism put on her parents. So a lot of times the trauma that we experience isn't necessarily money related. It can be other things. And so she immediately stopped using her credit card. She really was spending with abandon, I would say, just whatever she wanted. And that mindset shifted immediately because she made this investment in changing. And so she was extremely motivated. Plus, that's the way she is. So she stopped dunning right away. And over this period of 6 months, she created her plan. So I have people do that deep inquiry into your history, also looking at your accomplishments because you want to balance it all out. And then we start with the tracking piece, looking at the reality of where the spending is. And then creating a plan, going through every category and deciding, is this what I want to be spending? Do I need to spend more? Do I need to buy myself clothes once in a while? Like, am I being too frugal? Because some people have that. They're afraid of spending. Getting clear on what the right plan for right now, given my income, given my resources, and given my other goals, saving goals. And so she opened her first investment account. She started to put money aside for saving. And a lot of times things open up for people. There was a little windfall that she got to put a huge, not huge, but for her, a very large chunk of money into savings. That is a really different feeling. When we start to take up space that way with our money, it's really nice. It's very grounding. That's the other thing that people find. And she said, so I feel so powerful when I'm doing my numbers. It's really different from feeling disempowered around money. And the other thing that she started to do is create other income streams with some creative things that she does. So a lot of beautiful changes.
Beautiful. And I'm curious about white folks who come to do work with you. Do you do educational things around accountability and inclusivity with them? How does that play into your work?
I'm still finding my way with it. And I appreciate the question. It's an inquiry that I'm deep in right now. And I got some feedback recently. I do a monthly forum, Money, Justice, and Spirituality Forum. And in my introduction to one of those events, I wasn't happy with it because it didn't really bring in the cultural inequality piece in my intro. And one of the women there called me on that, and we've been in conversation. So always open to learning. In my group program, I do bring in the conversation from time to time. It's not a main focus because the main focus is really on the personal level for people to do their healing around it. Mm-hmm. But it's inherent in the environment that is created, that everybody is welcome, whatever your experience is, and wherever you are on your path. That's where it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There are so many different ways to look at how do we, as white folks, how do we do, you know, how do we serve? How do we work at changing the system? I've definitely been curious about that for a very long time. And some of the leaders that I've been able to talk to, one of them specifically, Fania Davis, her sister's Angela Davis, and she taught restorative justice at CIIS, California Institute of Integral Studies, my alma mater, and I took that course with her. And she also, I was honored to, she was in a course and supporting teaching with called Indigenous Mind with a friend and housemate at the time who was helping to teach that. And so she was in her home quite often, and I had the opportunity to talk with her about some of the paradoxes that white folks can come up against. And one of the, what she said that I thought was very, very helpful was that everybody has to be doing that internal work, you know, to become familiar with your own inner landscape, to be aware of our internal prejudices and against ourselves, against other people, to be constantly doing that inner work. What I found is, especially at the beginning of this big blossoming of conversation around race and inclusivity and equality that happened has been happening over the past several years, is a lot of white people attacking other white people. And it seemed to me like I'm gonna look outside of myself and find somebody else I can point the finger at, instead of kindly, compassionately, but also ruthlessly doing the inner work. Because hurt people hurt people. I first heard that from Fania Davis, hurt people hurt people. And if we don't even know the hurt that we're carrying inside of us, if we don't even know about the colonization of ourselves, we can't recognize how we're doing it to other people. It comes out in unconscious ways because it is so systemic. It's not just people of color that are impacted by it. Everybody's impacted by it because it's systemic. And so, you know, I'm not a governmental official, but the work I can do internally, I have full control over. And then that's the work I do with other people, is really getting familiar with their internal landscape and the programming, the colonization that's happened over generations around money, around relationship, around belonging, you know, core wounding, and unraveling it. Because if we're not doing that internal work, then we can't really, you know, focusing on what other people are doing is a distraction. So that feels really, really important. And I'm curious around how we work with money, how we vote with our dollars, right? That impacts as well. And I'm curious if that comes into the conversation in your groups or in your one-on-one work with people.
Absolutely. And before I touch on that, I just, while it's on my mind, want to touch on these elements of control, perfectionism, manipulation that can manifest in our relationship with money, withholding, fear. It's all part of the patriarchal white supremacist culture. So that is a piece that I think is an eye opener that I want to bring into my conversations a little bit more. Yeah. So as far as, yes, making an impact with our dollars, I donate to a number of organizations, the Movement for Black Lives. I can't think of the, oh, politicians that are in the Black Caucus in Congress. I want to support their work. They work so hard, and that's really important to me. And the Indigenous Environmental Network, I'm going to be donating my proceeds to my next event to that organization. So that feels really good to be tithing for change.
Yes.
And the other thing that, and so yes, when people are spending to think about how was this product sourced, you know, were people exploited? Also when you're investing, to really research your investments,
yes,
make sure they're in alignment with your values.
So important.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of work. We, my partner has two young children, a 7 and a 10-year-old. And we have conversations about things that we're passionate about. And mine was sustainability the other week, and shared with them around chocolate, because they love chocolate, that the kids love candy. And I said, were you aware that there is a lot of child slavery in the chocolate industry? And a lot of, you know, if you're buying Nestle, if you're buying all of these Snickers bars, you know, those all come from child slavery. And, you know, simply being aware and being willing to have those conversations and share, you know, with our youth, you know, to share with them, this is what it looks like, you know, being aware of where things come from, what's actually involved in it. Because when I first said, you know, do you know where your chocolate comes from? Like, from the store. I'm like, yeah, well, where did it come before that?
That's beautiful.
How it got here, I don't know. Well, let's talk about that. You know, let's get, because I think that even easier than grown-ups, children, when they're shared the truth, you know, when you share the truth mm-hmm. with them, they want to make a good decision, you know, and sharing those things early on before they get into habits of, well, this just meets my needs right now. You know, I'm in habits that of unconscious, you know, oh, I don't know where this came from. You know, I don't know what was involved in this. I don't know if there's any slavery involved in this or not, but I just bought it because I wanted it. And I'm so used to doing that. And I think those are really important conversations to be aware of and to share, you know, be a little bit of the, I don't want to say, the bummer at the party, you know, the person's like, are you aware, you know, before Halloween comes around, you know, where are you going to get your candy from, you know, to hand out to children, you know?
That's great. Being a disruptor. Yeah. And we do have to balance it, you know, because if we're on the topic, if it's the only topic, you know, then people will stop hearing us. Mm-hmm. So, but I love how you modeled that conversation. Just asking questions.
Yes. Yeah. Asking questions, being curious, I think.
Yeah.
Instead of coming, I mean, of course, I had a bit of an agenda, but to come in with curiosity is, I think, key in any shift of consciousness for ourselves, in our communities, with our families, with our clients. With people who we would like to enlighten, if we do have an agenda for other people, to commit to come in with curiosity instead of judgment, because that's still the power over attempt, right? I'm going to come in and argue with you and change your mind versus let's get curious about this together.
Yeah. And you know, the whole thing of othering can happen between different white communities, you know, Republicans and Democrats. And that doesn't really bring us to a place where we can hear each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are coming in, we're landing the plane, and I'm curious if there's any last messages or key pieces that you feel are important to share with the Inalienable Sovereignty community.
Well, as I'm sure is part of your conversation or the basis as well, the foundation of my work is self-care. And so that's where we can relax and be open to source being the voice of what our decisions are rather than any of these other external or deeper imprints. And doing our spiritual practices is so fundamental to staying in alignment with all of what we're talking about today.
Absolutely. Treating life in a sacred way, starting with ourselves and then recognizing everybody's life is sacred. Beautiful. And how can those who are interested in continuing this group around money and justice, how can people connect with you and learn more?
My website is moneywisdomcoach.com. I have a Money Wisdom Circle coming up on August 27th.
Just around the corner.
Yes, we're going to look at the four essential ingredients to changing your money patterns.
Beautiful. Moneywisdomcoach.com. Beautiful. Susan, thank you so much for the work that you do, for choosing to be in these uncomfortable and humbling conversations, and for spreading the good word. It really is important. And thank you for taking the time to share your wisdom with the community. Thank you, everyone else, for tuning in. We will be here next week, same time, same channel. Until we get to connect again, may the source be with you.